Welcome back. Whether your favorite team is from your home city far away or whether you're rooting for a local team here, there's likely been a nearby sports bar where you could find the game you're looking for along with cheap beer and wings. But this year saw a number of sports bar closures in this region. Some bars, like 10 Tavern in Chinatown, had barely been open a year. Ventnor's Sports Cafe in Adams Morgan had been around for nearly 15 years. While the nightlife industry can be a tricky business, it seems like a good time to check in on the landscape of local sports bars. Joining me in studio is Laura Hayes. Laura is the food editor at Washington City Paper. Laura, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Also in studio with us is Scott Auslander. He is the former owner of Ventnor Sports Cafe in Adams Morgan. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Tony Radwan is the director of operations at Tin Shop, a restaurant group that owns six bars in the Washington region. He's also the general manager of Franklin Hall in downtown D.C. Tony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Laura, what do you expect? What do people expect when they go to a sports bar in this area? What do you typically see or hear?
Well, there's two different reasons you go to a sports bar. It's you're either going to be around other people who support the home team and to just feel connected and cheer along with everyone wearing the same jersey, or you go to get a taste of home. My favorite sports bars have to have good food, have to have a wide selection of beer. And I like places with a lot of personality in terms of the decor and places that feel like they've have a lot of tradition.
Tony, we've discussed this a number of times on our show, whether or not D.C. is a good sports town. Is the sports bar business a good barometer by which to measure this? How is this debate reflected in the sports bar business?
I think it's a great city to have a sports bar because we are such a transient area. You can find somebody from this region or that region, and you know, if you plan well enough and you have enough options for them, they can come to your bar and they can find their local team playing on one of the sets. And, you know, they can find somebody else maybe from that area that they didn't know, and you can then have a place for them to connect at.
But Scott, how does that happen? As Tony mentioned, D.C. has a reputation for being a transient city. We're full of transplants from other cities who are loyal to other sports teams. Ventnor was a bar for Eagles fans, UNC fans, Syracuse fans. How do bars become affiliated with certain teams? How did yours?
Well, sometimes it happens organically, people just coming in and starting over time. Other times, a lot of that's because I'm from Philadelphia. I went to Syracuse, and it starts, you know, when I first open, people start coming in, and you give them a flavor of where they went to college, either foods or something from the local bar. We always did some North Carolina stuff from a bar that people went to while they were in college. You make cheesesteaks for Philadelphia fans. You give them a flavor of home and a place they can watch the game with other people, as opposed to just the home team.
So you brought the Eagles and Syracuse. Who bought UNC? Who brought UNC to your place?
You know, I opened in 2005, very early, and that was the year they won the national championship. And I had this great group of young people who would come and sit at the bar, and they were fun. They were 22 years old. They had just graduated. And they sort of organically made it into a Carolina bar. And this was before social media made it very easy to organize those groups. Now with social media, you can use Facebook and Twitter to organize alumni groups very quickly and very easily.
Laura, sports bars are typically tied to seasons of various professional leagues. Right now we're in the middle of football season and the early stages of basketball, hockey. That earlier this year, you wrote about the challenges that come during the off season. What did you learn about the yearly ups and downs of sports bars in this area?
Sure. A couple of people that I talked to mentioned, and this goes back to what we were talking about in terms of D.C. being a sports city, that we're not the kind of town where sports bars are going to be packed if there's not a game on. I'm not sure how true that is. I would support Scott's bar, you know, during the off season. I like the atmosphere there. I also went to Syracuse and am from Philadelphia, so I was his ideal customer. But yeah, it's tough. And you have to think about things like staffing. So if you're in kind of a boom and bust cycle of being really busy during the season and then quiet on the off season, it's hard to keep staff, and it's hard to do basic things like pay your rent when you don't know how many people are going to be coming in. If a game's on, you can kind of guess, you know, you usually see this amount of people from these cities. And so I can imagine that during the off season, it's a struggle. And even in season, if your team starts out and has a losing record early on, or your quarterback gets hurt, and just generally...
Wait a minute. We won't talk about that. Our football team has both of those things.
too soon. It's challenging altogether, just with an industry that's kind of boom and bust and goes in these cycles as opposed to kind of regular bars that draw people in year-round.
Tony, in your experience, how do seasons affect business?
Oh, it affects it very much so. Typically, summers can be rough, and not just even seasonally. You know, come to a sports bar on an off Tuesday or Wednesday at 10 o'clock, and there's only a handful of people there. You walk into a bar on game day, and they're packed, and everyone gets this idea that it's always like that, and it's not always like that. So I really think one of the challenges is that you've got to find other things to entice people to come there, to come to your bar, you know, other games or have fun special events that are, you know, somewhat out of the box and not necessarily sports related. Explore this craft beer movement and get some really good beers. Don't just stick to the, as you pointed out, you know, cheap beer and wings profile. Have something more to offer your guests.
Laura, listeners may not realize, but it costs a lot to carry games or to carry professional fights. How much can the technology and the cable packages cost bars?
Sure, I'll let the guys weigh in on specific numbers, but it's a significant cost, especially I think the NFL Sunday ticket is the priciest item. And from what I understand, it's by your capacity or how many people can be in the space at one time watching. I talked to one of your colleagues that said at Penn Social, NFL Sunday ticket could cost $15,000 per season, for example. And you have to keep in mind that with any bar and any restaurant, the profit margins are super slim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these guys aren't selling $16 cocktails. They're selling pints and they're selling cans. And so, you know, this money has to come from somewhere. I've noticed, and we talked a little bit about this before the show, that people aren't... spending a lot of money for the pay-per-view events as much anymore, the mm-hmm. UFC fights, the boxing matches. So I've noticed like people are starting to kind of cut down on their costs that way. But of course, you have to have NFL Sunday ticket.
Care to comment on that?
These packages are very expensive. And one of the things that happens is customers expect you to have them.
Everything.
They expect you to have everything. They expect you to stream everything. They expect you to have the technology to provide them with the games that they don't have. They can't figure it out. They don't know how to watch the game. They expect you to be able to do it. I know when we closed, I had cable coming from Comcast, Dish Network, and DirecTV, all coming to the building so that I could get as many channels as possible.
A lot of people are cord cutting, unsubscribing from their home cable packages in favor of subscriptions to Netflix and the like. When streaming services become popular, did more people come to your bar for live games?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think you've got a community of young people who cut the cord and might not get local channels. I also think that you have people who can now watch on their phone. People used to come in and I used to say, hey, you missed it. Oh, you wouldn't believe. And he says, no, I was watching it as I walked down the street, which obviously wasn't the case 10 years ago.
Tony, you've had experience opening at least 3 bars in this region. How do you budget not just for cable packages, but for TVs, speakers, and all of the technology that goes along with that?
Well, I mean, you certainly have to offer a little something for everybody. And so to me, it's just the cost of doing business. I think you have to do it. You have to get the Sunday ticket. You have to get certain packages. The SEC package, you know, I don't even bat an eye out about. Big Ten package, don't even bat an eye about. Those are things that are absolutely expected. Now, sometimes you'll have somebody that comes in that wants something kind of on you know, the peripheral. And in unfortunately, there's times when I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, we really, you know, we don't have that or we can't offer that. But those are very rare and far between. So, you know, those are pretty much what you always have to kind of like just build into your place. You know it from the start, and you carry it out.
Among friends of yours are people you know, Laura. Has cord cutting been an influence on whether or not people go to sports bars?
That's a good question. It I don't know. I think I know the majority of my newsroom at City Paper were a very young team, and a lot of my coworkers don't have cable. I think there's some options on like Hulu and things like that where you can get live sports, but I would imagine among, you know, the big university populations that are here that would be a factor, that they would be going to bars. I'm not sure if, you know, if college students would be able to pay for such services. So I think there's probably been somewhat of a bump there. I don't know if it's enough to kind of keep the lights on.
I think they're trying to figure out a way to get you to not cut the cord and to use their services. I think ESPN now has a $5 package where you can stream ESPN, ESPN2, and some of the ESPN Plus items.
We got a tweet from Mindy who says, "My favorite sports bar is the bar closest to my house with a TV and cable. Mm-hmm. I have to go to a bar to watch sports because my dog is not a fan of my, shall we say, passion." I guess that happens. People come out to watch sports because they can't watch it at home, either because of the dog or because of roommates or because of a spouse who doesn't want to watch these things. I know what sends me out to sports bars from time to time. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation on sports bars. I'm Kojo Namdi. Welcome back. We're talking sports bars in this region with Laura Hayes, food editor at Washington City Paper. Scott Auslander is the former owner of Ventnor Sports Cafe in Adams Morgan. And Tony Radwan is the director of operations at Tin Shop, a restaurant group that owns 6 bars in this region. He's also the general manager of Franklin Hall in downtown D.C. And we're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. What are your favorite memories inside a local sports bar? 800-433-8850. Laura, sports bars are not known for having an extensive drink list or a wide-ranging chef-driven menu. Is that a fair characterization?
Less and less so today. I think sports bars are looking for any way to compete. So I've seen the quality of food definitely go up, which I think is great. As I mentioned when we started, that's what I look for personally in a sports bar. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to be spending $30 on an entree. You do want the nostalgia of getting those comfort foods, those things that you can eat with your hands, but little touches here and there that kind of bring up the overall quality. As little things like, I mean, just choosing better ingredients is certainly an aid.
Tony, but for the bars that don't try to go above and beyond with food, do they have to work harder to attract patrons by providing things like, trivia nights, partnerships with social sports leagues, or other draws?
Well, I think those partnerships go across the board. I think those are smart things to do with partnerships with trivia groups, no matter if you're getting a crowd or not, because they, again, those really fuel those days where there's not a huge sports event going on, because we, you know, they usually plan them on those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays. But certainly, you know, there's a place for that traditional sports bar now, but that place, I think, has gotten smaller and smaller, as I before mentioned. I think you really do need to kind of go above and beyond with your food. You know, don't get that frozen package of chicken fingers and, you know, cut them yourself, bread them yourself, do them by hand. People notice the difference in the food and the product that you put out there. You know, expand your cocktail list. Offer those things for those people that you know, follow their sports friends into the bar and are looking for something other than, you know, a cheap beer. Try to provide something for everybody, and that way everybody has a great time.
Scott, your bar, Ventnor Sports Cafe, closed last month after nearly 15 years on 18th Street Northwest. In the end, according to the politician in New York, the rent was just too damn high. In your time running the place, how did it become more than just a neighborhood bar?
Well, I think you have to be part of the community, whether it be through the food or through the beverage offers, and grow up a little bit with the community. Adams Morgan, where I was located, has changed drastically in the last 15 years.
I mean, since the Million Al's days?
Yeah, and the neighborhood has gotten older. It's gotten more mature. I know about 7 or 8 years ago, we closed for a few weeks. We renovated. We gave the place sort of a more mature feel because the customer base was no longer in their 20s. They were in their 30s. They were in their 40s. They went from having you know, having their 25th birthday party to having 40th birthday parties. So when they get older, you have to try to grow with your customer base a little bit.
What happens when a neighborhood changes like that? There's a number of bars that have left 18th Street this year. There's Bourbon and Black Squirrel, to name just two. What happens when longtime bars like yours leave a neighborhood that's clearly in flux right now?
Well, I think in that particular neighborhood, I think one of the things people really enjoyed about the neighborhood was the grit, the local flavor that the businesses. There was an article yesterday about the longtime bookstore closing. And I think people liked the individual nature that I was on site, that when you went to the French restaurant, there was a French couple that was on site. They lived upstairs. That was part of the grit, the character of Adams Morgan that lasted forever. And the neighborhood probably is losing a little bit of that. So the customers have more of a demand for different kinds of businesses.
But I think the bookstore is not closing. It may have been sold, but I don't think it's closing. But it does say something about the character of the neighborhood changing, doesn't it, Laura?
Absolutely, and we're going to be seeing more and more of this. It's not just sports bars, but a lot of restaurants and bars and businesses are seeing their 5- and 10-year leases come up, and I'm hearing reports of landlords tripling and quadrupling rents, and we have to really kind of think carefully as a city of what we want our neighborhoods to look like and to feel like, because, you know, with those higher rents, it's more likely that, you know, an outside chain could come in, a bigger sports bar, you know, like a Dave and Buster's, a place that has a ton of money. So we have to, I think, you know, put pressure on these landlords to just make it affordable for places that have made neighborhoods stay in place.
Tony, you have opened up bars like Franklin Hall in D.C. and the Highline in Crystal City. Speaking of which, did you know something that the rest of us didn't know about Crystal City at the time?
I think it's National Landing now.
Yes, it is National Landing. How do you study neighborhoods to determine the right location for a bar?
Well, I think you check out and see what where there's a need. Is there they went to Crystal City, they took a look, and they said, well, you know what, we could really use a bar that's like this, that offers great beer, offers great sports. You know, this block doesn't have anything that provides that for the community that's right here. And then by doing some just very basic research, you can figure out what's needed for an area.
I think there's real estate developers, too, out there that are looking for businesses that they think will provide an amenity to their either residential or office tenants. And a lot of times I'm finding, as I look for new locations, that sports bars are something they're looking for.
You mentioned looking for new locations. You're hoping to revive Ventnor in another location?
It wouldn't be upsetting to me. You've got a location for me?
I have a few in mind, but I think National Landing is already taken. What are the challenges in doing that for you right now?
Well, right now the challenges are that I'm closed. But it's opened me up, and I've got a lot of opportunities out there. And there's a lot of developers, big landlords, who are looking for a place like a sports bar, an American Tavern, where people can go. It provides sort of a third place. They can sit downstairs. You know, the rent is too damn high, and people live in small apartments, and you can't bring 6 or 7 people into your apartment to watch the game. They like the idea. You can go downstairs. It's an everyday kind of menu, and it's not $16 cocktails and $32 entrees.
Got an email from Jeffrey who asks, what's a sports bar nowadays? Most restaurants and bars have multiple screens, so why need there be sports bars? Places like The Rock or Champions, remember those, are not needed. Regular restaurants and bars are now nesting places for fans. Is that true, Tony?
I don't necessarily think so. I think you can, you know, I think you can feel like, I want to go watch this game and be around like-minded people that also want to watch this game. I may or may not know them, but I just want to go out and do that. I don't want to go through ordering in my food and watching the game at home. I want to be around other people that I may or may not know and enjoy the moment out there. It'll be the closest thing to being there live.
Yeah, if I can't sing the Eagles fight song after we maybe finally score a touchdown this season, I don't want to be there. I want to be in a sports bar where anything goes.
We got a tweet from Jeff who says, based on international research, people who subscribe to top-tier sports packages are the least likely to cut the cord. You know about that at all, Laura?
I don't.
Seems to make sense.
Well, it makes a little sense in the fact that those are sports fans. And one of the things you need with the court is your local channels. And that'll get you your big games on Sunday, your big college football games on Saturday. And I could see how those people tend to be watching TV.
Well, how about watching other things? We got a tweet from Jamie who says, sports bars are more than just identifying with sports teams or city. It's also about communities mm-hmm. coming together, such as Nelly's and Pitchers, both LGBTQ sports bars. I love watching everything from the World Cup to the State of the Union with my community. Have you found that people like to come just because they feel a sense of community there, and so they'll come and watch the State of the Union address if necessary?
Oh, absolutely. We have huge crowds for election nights.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're the same people that come in and watch the sports games because they say, you know, this was a great place. I came here to watch my team play. I came here with my friends from the neighborhood. And now I can go watch the elections as they roll in. It's very much the same group of people. I think that's a fantastic thing.
The bars owned by the restaurant group that you work for seem to have a similar look and feel, somewhat kind of industrial and warehousey. What mm-hmm. elements, if any, do you try to bring into a bar from the surrounding neighborhood?
I think we try to see where, what people, organically what they bring in once we set up a parameter. We say, okay, here's this look, here's this thing. And then as they come in, we adjust. And say, okay, now this is what fits this neighborhood. We don't try to go in there and dictate to the neighborhood how it's going to work. We let them kind of take the lead on that.
You got a tweet from John who says, I'm partial to Lou's City Bar. It's close to home in Columbia Heights and has enough TVs for all NFL games, and it's apparently the neighborhood's only sports bar. Are you looking for a neighborhood necessarily, Scott, where you're likely to be the only sports bar in that neighborhood?
I don't think you're looking for a neighborhood. Sometimes you're looking for an opportunity, a space. In the city, you're sort of in the game if you're in the city. The city is a unique space for the sports bars. I think in the suburbs, they tend to be a little bit more chain restaurant-y. But here in the city, mm-hmm. it's a place where people are going down to watch the games. We've also got the international community. You can open for breakfast now with soccer. Mm-hmm. I believe this is one of the strongest markets in the country for soccer.
It is.
And that provides you with a breakfast element. You know, you're talking about people watching EPL at 9 o'clock in the morning.
I look forward to the days when you can open up early for cricket, but that's all the time we have because this is our year-end membership campaign, and so we have to take time for that. Laura Hayes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Laura, the food editor at Washington City Paper. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Scott Auslander is the former owner of Ventnor Sports Cafe in Adams Morgan. And Tony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tony Radwan is the director of operations at Tin Shop, a restaurant group that owns 6 bars in this region. He's also the general manager of Franklin Hall in downtown D.C. Today's show on sports bars was produced by Ruth Tam. Our discussion on lane widening was produced by Lauren Marco. Coming up tomorrow, we check in with the region's bookworms to hear what they're most excited to read this winter season. What's the best book you read this year? Record a voice memo, no more than 30 seconds, and send it to kojo@wamu.org with the subject line, Best Books. We'll share some of your responses tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
The Kojo Nnamdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, Margaret Barthel, and Lauren Marco. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schrobsdorf. Our intern is Talia Drayton. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, go to kojoshow.org.